Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Dietmar, and welcome to Dietmar's Chatterbox. As mentioned before, I'm a South African living in London of German heritage. I have a nice mix of ideas and societal experiences, which I hope to be able to share on this particular podcast. As I said before, I have been meaning to do this podcast for a while. Now that I'm the fifth episode in, I'm glad that I have actually started to do it. It was just quite interesting to get people's viewpoints and expressions and get people excited about domain names, which is the first topic we're talking about. I'll be talking about many other different things on this particular podcast, but obviously domain names and the history and what actually happens in this particular industry is something that I deal with on a daily basis. And I currently have over 19 years worth of domain name experience. But also I have experience within the finance sector, political sector, as well as in, domain name consultancy. Other topics I'll be covering in my podcast going forward after finishing up on domains will be things like Funko Pops, which are commonly referred to as bobbleheads, as well as technology stuff, you know, like iPads, Apple products, Android products, etc. Politics, if and when a topic comes up that's not too controversial, and other issues of the day. One of the most important things I could say about this whole podcast is that any of the views expressed by me during these podcasts are my own and do not represent the company I work for. So to be clear, this is all the information, all the bits of information that I put across to everybody, etc. This is all personal. This is all mine and does not represent my company's viewpoints, etc. So without further delay, let's start with episode 5. And this one, we're going to look at the types of domain names that are out there. In episode 5, we will be looking at the first grouping, which I refer to as the generic top level domain names, or depending on what part of the world you're from, they're called the legacy top-level domain names. So, the main GTLDs we'll be looking at in today's session are .com, .org, .biz, .net, and .info. There are other ones out there that are seen as legacy TLDs. So, for example, .mil for military, .gov for government, .aero, which is to do with the aerospace industry, .jobs, and .int. But they are not open, and at the time they were launched, I should say, they had certain restrictions or were heavily restricted. So, for example, mil, gov, .edu, and .int are all highly restricted TLDs, and only people within the military, in the US, government in the US, education in the US, and international bodies can get those domain names. Some of the other ones were originally highly regulated, so .jobs and .aero, but those restrictions have been lifted since those names have gone live. So let's start with .com. This is by far the largest by volume and also the most famous TLD. Originally, this was seen as a domain name for the commercial entities, so com, commercial, and that is the reason behind the .com shortened name. It was launched in 1995 to the general public, but was originally created in January of 1985, along with some of the other TLDs that we're going to talk about today, as well as some of those that were restricted, like mil, gov, edu, int, etc. I have mentioned a few famous domain names that have been registered before, like the very first name, which was symbolics.com, and also the story of sex.com, probably the most exciting story, pardon the pun, within the entire domain name industry. The original technical provider and registrar, which they were all rolled into one at the time of launch, was a company called Network Solutions, which took control in January 1993 from the US government Department of Defense. And the cost of domain names varied, but came in at roughly, give or take, $50 per year. When you registered a .com originally, it was for a minimum of 2 years and therefore cost you $100. But due to the nature of the industry, there started to be a large amount of disquiet, put it that way, around Network Solutions basically controlling the growth of .com from start to finish, i.e. from the technical aspect as well as the registrar perspective. And therefore, in 1997, VeriSign was created and took over the technical aspect of the TLD. And networks, and now Network Solutions now remains just solely as a registrar. The Department of Commerce was responsible for the VeriSign contract, and VeriSign reported in air brackets to them. Currently, there are about 160 million odd .com domain names registered worldwide. From November 2018, VeriSign signed a contract with ICANN instead of with the US Department of Commerce, and is now basically, in air brackets again, a normal top-level domain name. Currently, the wholesale price of a .com is about $8.29 per year. But as per their contract with ICANN, they have the ability to increase the cost of the domain name's wholesale price. So that $8.29 is the wholesale price. So that's the price that the registrars are charged. Registrars can charge anything after that. I mean, if they wanted to charge $1 million, they can charge $1 million. But VeriSign only gets $8.29 of that. They are roughly, give or take, at last count, just over 1,000 registrars that are signed up to sell .com domain names, and that's worldwide. So .com is by far the largest TLD currently in existence by volume. Next one we'll look at will be .net. So the .net was also one of the original TLDs created by the US government back in January of 1985. And was meant to be used for network companies. So that's where the .net comes in. But since its creation, it was basically open to anyone, as was .com, and .com is still open to everyone, but .net is also open to anyone. So anybody can buy a .net name. It was originally foreseen or envisaged that .net would be owned by internet service providers, or ISPs, you know, for example, like Sky or Virgin in the US, in the UK, I should say, Comcast, etc., in the US, etc., and other technical infrastructure providers. So, for example, hosting providers, net switches, data centers, etc. They would all have a .net name, as this would seem like the best option. But there has never really been any limitations on who can register. So just like .com, this TLD was originally sold and run by Network Solutions, and has also been moved onto VeriSign for the technical backend. And there are hundreds of registrars permitted to sell .net domain names, and they include Network Solutions, who were the original owners or operators of the TLD. The renewal of this TLD is automatic as long as VeriSign meets the ICANN board's criteria. And the next renewal date is March of 2021. That's this year. And should happen without any issue. VeriSign took control of .NET in June of 2005. The first .NET name that was registered was called Nordic.NET. Nordu.net, I should say. And was registered in 1985. Currently, there are about 14 million .NET registrations, according to the latest stats. So after .com, .NET is the fifth largest registry in the world. That table includes ccTLDs and other legacy TLDs. So the next one we'll look at is .org. So .org, this TLD was amongst, again, the original TLDs that were created in 1985, and was originally envisaged to be used by organizations, therefore .org, which could be public, not-for-profit, or otherwise. It was a home for terms that did not quite fit in the .com or .net envisaged sphere of registration. The control of the TLD was taken over by Public Interest Registry from VeriSign, or PIR for short, who have run it since January of 2003. The TLD has been aimed at non-for-profits and other organizations of this ilk, but anyone can buy a .org as it is not restricted. So when you're going through the purchase process at a registrar, they do not double check that you are a non-for-profit, or you have freedom of speech provider, or any of that kind of stuff. So basically anybody can register .org. In 2019/2020, there was an attempted buyout of PIR by Ethos Capital. Ethos Capital CEO is Fadi Chahadi, who used to also be the CEO of ICANN. And the price that was put forward was $1.135 billion, so the B, US dollars. And the majority of the money would have gone to the Internet Society, which holds the contract for .org. So VeriSign is the back-end provider originally, and then PIR became the back-end provider or the technical provider. But the actual contracted party was originally and still is currently the Internet Society. The sale was stopped by the ICANN board in a very rare intervention on their part. They basically turned around and said that it was not in the interests of the community that Ethos Capital was able to purchase the .org TLD contract. But in December 2020, so just December just passed, another company, Donuts, which is the largest registry operator in the world by number of TLDs, purchased Afilias, who are the back-end technical provider for .org. And that sale is almost now completed. Currently, the number of .org domain names that are registered is roughly around about 10 million. I mean, these numbers do vary day to day as new names are registered and names are set to lapse, etc. .org also allows internationalized domain names, or IDNs for short, which are names not written in ASCII or English, but for example, Korean, German, Chinese, etc. The price of registration for .org had always been capped, been capped since 2003 at least, at $9.03. That's the wholesale price. But in July of 2019, ICANN removed that cap, and there was a large number of complaints about this. So there were a lot of people that said, you know, why are you removing the cap? You shouldn't remove the cap, but the cap was still removed. So now the price can increase as and when PIR decides that it wishes to increase the price of .org name. The next one we're going to look at is .info. Now, .info, as you may follow the trend that's going on so far, this name was derived from information, so the term information. But registration requirements do not prescribe any particular purpose or use, so anybody can register .info. The TLD was actually a response to ICANN's highly publicized announcement in late 2000 of a phased release of 7 new generic top-level domain names. This was the first major addition of top-level domain names into the domain name system since 1985, when those original ones that I mentioned came into force, .com, .org, .net, etc. .info has been operated by Afilias since its inception. And in 2003, it was the first gTLD domain name to support the IETF's standards-based internationalized domain names process. So basically, like I said before, .org allows IDNs, but .info was the first to allow allow IDNs to be registered within its system. In 2001, Afilias' CTO at the time, Ram Mohan, came across a couple of problems with the .info name when it went into the root. And this fell under what's called universal acceptance. In other words, acceptance of the domain name within the internet ecosphere. Now, the problem was that this particular TLD, so .info, was the first TLD that was longer than 3 characters. So in other words, all the other ones, .com, .org, .net, .gov, .mil, etc., were all 3 characters or less. So problem was that when people bought a .info and tried to use it for email, for example, a lot of the email clients, so like Outlook, at the time AltaVista, I guess, and all those types of email clients, looked at it and went, oh, hold on a second. That doesn't follow the fully qualified domain name structure, which I've mentioned before, which is the FQDN, which says a name needs to be 3 characters or less for it to be a valid domain name. So a lot of people bought .infos and then weren't able to use them for email. That has subsequently changed, and that got fixed within about a year of it actually being spotted. So prior to the launch of .info, names of countries were reserved from registration. So things like Germany.info, for example, or UnitedKingdom.info. And this was at the request of ICANN via the GAC, the Government Advisory Committee, which said that, you know, you can't have those particular names. Please, can you block them? Obviously, that did cause a little bit of an issue for those people that had done pre-registration. So .info offered a pre-registration process. So you could say, yeah, I'd like to register Germany.info. And you'd pay your pre-registration fee, but then it got changed so that you weren't able to actually get that particular TLD or that second level name. So that was a bit of an interesting situation. .info currently has about 5.2 million domain names, and one of the events in 2011, obviously, which was the attacks in New York. The Metropolitan Transportation Authority, or the MTA, switched to a simpler name. So in other words, they had Metropolitan Transportation Authority.com, I believe it was, at the time. And they changed it to M for Mike, T for Tango, A for Alpha, .info, which then takes users to the latest information on schedules, route changes, and all that kind of stuff within the New York Metropolitan Transportation Authority. So that was quite an interesting change, where people had gone from using a traditionally long TLD to using a 3-character term for ease of use for use in a city, for example, etc. Now, Afilias is still the registry operator for .info, and they are also the registry backend operator for .aero, and they have been quite they push an aggressive marketing campaign with regards .info and .aero, which helps, you know, registrars with incentive schemes and outreach events, etc. So they do push quite heavily to bring up the number of .info names that have been registered. The next one in the queue is .biz, and if we follow the same process as before, this one's slightly different, but the registration of .biz names was meant to be used for businesses. So obviously businesses would be bus, but that doesn't quite work, so .biz was the name that was chosen. And this is the phonetic spelling of the first syllable of business, so B-I-Z. One of the main reasons for the creation of .biz was to relieve some of the demand for domains in the .com top-level sector. So a lot of businesses weren't able to get their .com version of their business name. Okay, so what did they do? They went and registered in .biz. So that was one of the reasons for the creation of .biz. Again, there's no specific legal or geographic qualification to register .biz name, except that it must be used for bona fide business or commercial use. It was created in 2001, and the TLD is administered by GoDaddy. Now, the reason it's GoDaddy is that GoDaddy actually purchased the company that was the original backend provider, and they were called Neustar. So now they are called GoDaddy Registry Services. And registrations, as per all top-level domain names, are processed via accredited registrars. Now, in contrast to other newly created top-level domains of that particular period, the .biz registry did not implement the sunrise period. So a lot of the other ones had sunrise periods, and sunrise periods allowed trademark holders to have first dibs at terms that were related to their business. Dopbiz instead had what's called a they had a thing called, well, they during the sunrise, instead of a sunrise period, they had a trademark owner's first chance of registration period. But they had a procedure which they allowed them to file intellectual property claims in advance and then challenge any eventual registrations through a policy named Startup Trademark Opposition Policy, or STOP for short, STOP. Now, so basically what happens is you put forward your IP rights, it goes into a list, and if somebody else beats you to the punch to register that name, you can attempt to claim your name back via the STOP process. So there were a few names that were successfully obtained by trademark holders from other registrants through this policy. Some of the more controversial ones were things like paint.biz and canadian.biz. But canadian.biz, that got overturned in a later court decision. At this present moment in time, there are roughly 2.5 million registrations in the .biz registry. Again, as I said before, these numbers go up and down on a daily basis based on names lapsing, new names being bought, etc. Now, there are a few other names that were created, and I've mentioned them already throughout this particular session. There's .gov, .mil, .edu, .int, .aero, .jobs. These were created over a period of time spanning from 1985 to 2001 and mainly have had registrations on who can be who can register within these TLDs. .aero and .jobs, as I mentioned before, no longer have any restrictions and anyone can register a domain name in these TLDs. The other terms, so .gov, .mil, .edu, and .int, are still highly restricted, and there are no current plans to ever open these TLDs to the general public. So there's no plan at all for this to happen. Again, thank you. So although some of the TLDs I've spoken about today are referred to as new gTLDs, for example, those that were created in 2001, they are no longer new. So they are now just looked upon as legacy TLDs or generic top-level domains. And next week, I'll be talking about the next new gTLD grouping. And this came out of a round of applications that took place in April of 2012. And there were approximately 2,000 odd applications during that particular round. And of those, at the time, there was about 1,600 new top-level names were created. That number has subsequently changed with companies either going bust, closing down, no longer using the TLD, giving it back, selling it on, etc. Again, I've given you all a lot of information in this episode. And if anyone has any questions, please reach out to me. I look forward to discussing further and sharing my knowledge of the domain name market over the next few weeks even more. And also starting to give some more other topics some light as well. I hope to have you all back again soon. And I hope that you will subscribe to this podcast. So I'm going to selfless plug, tell your friends and family and etc. Tell them to have a listen. They will learn some interesting stuff about domain names that a lot of people outside of the domain name industry don't really know about or didn't even know existed. So it's quite an interesting sector. So bye for now. Have a great day. And always remain positive no matter what the situation is that you're in. And also stay safe. COVID-19 is still around, but stay safe, be cautious, and we'll talk again next week. Thank you very much, everyone. Bye-bye. Good afternoon, everyone. I hope you're all doing very well on this Sunday afternoon. Let's start off the podcast. As mentioned before, my name is Dietmar, and I'd like to welcome you to Dietmar's Chatterbox. I'm a South African living in London of German heritage, And this has given me a good mix of ideas and societal experiences, which I hope to be able to share on this podcast as it goes along. So I hope you enjoy today's podcast. It is actually a fun one. I know some people might find it a bit odd, but it is quite fun. During the following podcasts, or going forward, I'll be talking about many different types of things, topics on this podcast. Some will deal with what I have the most experience in, i.e. domain names, their history, creation, use, etc. I'll also talk about a variety of other topics, including Funko Pops, or as they're commonly referred to in the rest of the world, bobbleheads. I'll also talk a little bit about technology, politics, as and when that topic is a safe topic to talk about, as it is quite a divisive topic, and any other issues of major importance at that particular time. As I've mentioned before, I have over 19 years worth of domain experience, as well as experience in the financial, political, and, as I've said before, in the domain consultancy experience. The most important thing I'd like to bring to everyone's attention is that all the views expressed by me during this podcast are my own views and do not represent the company I work for's viewpoints, etc. So again, all of this is personal. So without further delay, let's start with episode 6 and new GTLDs, or new generic top-level domain names, from the 2012 application phase. I'll focus specifically on the 2012 application window, and then I'll deal with a couple of the types of TLDs that came out of the 2012 application window, namely open TLDs and community TLDs. In the following episode, I'll focus on other types of TLDs that came out of the 2012 application window, namely restricted TLDs, geo or geographic TLDs, and dot brand, or as they're commonly referred to, spec 13 or specification 13 TLDs. So without further ado, let's start with new generic top-level domain names, application phase. In July of 2011, ICANN, who I've spoken about before, had a board meeting after a few years of discussion and decided to approve the application phase or application window for new generic top-level domain names. They'd had a few other application phases prior to the 2012 window, but those were very limited in scope and size. This particular one was seen as a open to the general public. Obviously, some of the restrictions involved in applying were firstly that you were a company in good standing, a company that could carry the financial burden over at least a 10-year period. Also, that the directors of the company, whoever they may be, were not seen as bad actors within the ICANN community, i.e. they hadn't been done for, bad domain practices, etc. But the most important thing was that you were a business. So there weren't any individuals that applied. There was one applicant by the name of Richard Lee from Asia who applied, but his name actually is his business name. So it's not as if he applied, for himself as an individual. He applied as his business, so his brand, using air brackets at this moment. You can't see that. So ICANN board came together, decided, okay, we're going to go ahead with this. And so from July of 2011 through to the beginning of 2012, ICANN worked on what was called the Application Guidebook, which was a, as the name suggests, a guidebook that set out all the rules and regulations for an application. So in other words, what type of technical expertise you needed to display. Again, the name of the company, what kind of company it was, Was it a company in good standing? Did the company have sufficient funding? Was the name that was being applied for used by somebody else? Each name had to be a minimum of 3 characters and above. It could not be 2 characters. So 2 characters are reserved for CC TLDs or country code TLDs, which we'll be talking about in the later episode. So there were quite a few restrictions in place. The application window officially started in January of 2012, where, as I've mentioned before, you had to provide proof through a portal that was created by ICANN. You had to provide proof into this portal of, you know, good standing, company name, name of directors, where those directors were born, where they originated from, where they currently resided. Obviously, their names, naturally. also, you know, information on the company that was applying. Also, and information about how much money that company had in the bank, for example. That was the initial application phase. If you were successful in passing that particular piece, you went on to the next section, which was meant to take place from the end of January through to April of 2012. But unfortunately, due to a technical glitch within the ICANN application system, that was extended. So the application window was extended all the way through until June of 2012. There was a hole that was identified in some of the coding, which meant that certain individuals may or may not have been able to see other applicants' data, etc., and applications and ideas as to what they were going to do with their TLDs, importantly, what TLDs they were going to apply for, etc. But going back, during the next part of the application phase, you provided the TLDs that you were going to apply for. And at the time, you only really had 2 options. Open, i.e. you free to use, or community, i.e. A TLD that is aimed towards a specific type of community. To get either one of those, again, you had to provide certain bits of information. The community one was slightly more onerous in that you had to have approval from that particular community or a subset of that community. And that would include letters of endorsement, letters just to say that, you know, they are aware that this application was taking place and they thought it was a great idea, etc. So you filled in this application phase. There were 50 questions. The first 18 questions were on the company itself, directors in the company, and also giving a small idea of what you were going to do with the TLD. So what were your plans for the particular TLD? Questions 19 through to 40 were more to do with the technical aspects of your TLD. So they were looking for information on who your back-end provider was going to be, so the people that were going to provide the technical infrastructure for your TLD. They were looking for things like, you know, did you have the ability to connect with registrars? So there was a lot of technical information that was required, a lot of diagrams and information that was provided by back-end providers at the time. Questions 45 to 50 were the financial questions. And at the time, you had to, again, as I say, provide information on how much money you had in the bank. You had to provide a letter of credit or some form of security, i.e. you had to have a certain amount of money in a bank account or approval from a bank that for a period of 6 years after you obtained the TLD, that you could cover the costs of running that TLD. Then after that, you also had to provide some modeling, financial modeling, i.e. how many names did you expect to sell? How much did you expect to charge for your domain names? how much of that money were you going to keep for yourself? How much money were you going to pass on to the registrars, owners of the business, etc.? You also had to provide proof that you could pay ICANN's fees, for example. So the questions were quite in depth, and there was a lot of information that was required. At this stage, nobody really understood how many companies would apply for new GTLDs. ICANN at the time thought maybe 500, there would be an interest for 500 new GTLDs. Turns out that ICANN was slightly wrong. The interest, there were over 2,000 applications for TLDs when the window closed in June of 2012 and was made public. So over 2,000 names were applied for. They weren't all applied for by a single body. Some bodies like Donuts applied for over 364 names. Companies like Amazon applied for over 100. Google applied for close to 100. Companies like UniRegistry. There were others that applied for multiple sets of names. But overall, there were just over 2,000 odd names that were applied for. Now, the important thing is to remember is that when you applied, you were providing, firstly, $185,000 up front to cover the cost of the application. So however many applications you paid for, each one was $185,000. You didn't have any discounts or anything like that for the number of TLDs that you applied for. You also had to provide proof that you could pay ICANN its yearly fee of $25,000, which is billed on a quarterly basis, but still is a yearly fee, $25,000. Then you had data escrow costs that you had to take into account, as well as costs for back-end providers, so the technical infrastructure. And depending on the brand, the organization that applied, you may have used consultants, lawyers, domain experts, people from within the ICANN community to assist in your application. So on average, an application roughly over a 10-year period would cost each applicant, give or take a few pennies here and there, roughly about $1 million per TLD. And that's even before you take into account how much money you are going to try and make out of your TLD. It's not a cheap exercise. It's not a cheap option, but it is something that companies are willing to take part in. So the window closes in June of 2012, after its small extension. And at this stage, if there were any TLDs that were applied for by multiple applicants, then they were put to one side and they went through an auction phase. So people either withdrew their application because they just went, oh, damn, I'm going to have to go up against, 20 other applicants. I don't really have the time, the exercise, the effort or the energy to do that. I'm going to rather just withdraw, cut my losses and take some of my money back from ICANN. Alternatively, there were auctions. Some of the auctions were private auctions. So in other words, the value of the price paid for the TLD is not public. Then there were open auctions, which were run by ICANN. And they were called the ICANN auctions. And this information was public. And one of those public auctions was .web, which went for over $120 million, so it went for quite a bit of money. It's still not completely resolved, but it is on its way to being resolved, even though it's been 8 years since the auction, etc., process started. But then obviously now that all the names have become public, it turned out that ICANN and the community may have misjudged the interest from other parts of the community for TLDs. So Because there was only really two options that were available, an open or a community type of application, it became clear that there were other types of applications that had applied or companies that had applied. We had restricted TLDs. So those were TLDs that were restricted by who could actually buy a domain name within those TLDs. There were restrictions on, you know, where you were, who you were, etc. There were geo TLDs, so geographic TLDs like .London, for example, .Wales and Cymru, .Brussels, .Amsterdam, which were restricted initially as to who could apply, i.e. you needed to be in London, for example, to apply for a .London in its early stages. There were brand TLDs, so in other words, TLDs that brands had applied for that specifically matched their brand. So .Microsoft, for example, .HBO, .Fox, .Comcast, you know, so these were exact matches of brands. You had open TLDs, which we'll talk about in a few minutes, and community TLDs, etc. So ICANN ended up with a whole host more TLDs than it anticipated, and types and uses of TLDs. In today's episode, I'm going to talk about two types of TLDs. So the original envisaged TLDs, open and community TLDs. In the next episode, I'll look at the other ones. So restricted TLDs, geographic TLDs, .brand TLDs, etc. And how they came to be in existence after some negotiations, etc. So let's look at open TLDs. Now, an open TLD is like any normal TLD, so like a .com, for example, or a .biz, .info, .org, TLDs like that, where you as the applicant can or end user can register a name within that TLD. There's no restrictions on you. There aren't any strange goalposts that you have to go through to get to or own one of those names. You don't have to use it in a particular way, etc. So examples of that are, for example, the very first TLD that signed its contract, .xyz, so X, Y, and Z at the end. Interestingly enough, .xyz, it has one of the more high-profile registrations in it, or abc.xyz, which is the was registered by Google, so ABCXYZ, which they used as a rebranding for a lot of their services and company name. So they bought ABC.XYZ. We had things like .club, for example, whose main purpose in life is to be a place for people who want to have a .club name. So in other words, you have a sports club of some sort, or a boxing club, or an acting club, or some kind of club, and you could register your name in there. There's other ones out there that are of interest, like .blog, for example. Now, blogging or podcasting and that kind of stuff is quite a big thing on the internet, so .blog was quite an obvious choice. So that one is out there. So there's quite a few different types of open TLDs that people could apply for. The interesting thing is that because these TLDs are owned by private entities, they could charge anything they want for the registration of a second level name. Whereas with some of the other older TLDs, they had a restriction as to what their prices could be, but which is fair because they were the originals and they've dominated the market for the last 25, 30 years. So they have restrictions in place with regards how much you can, you know, how much you would pay for a second level name. Whereas these new GTLDs, there was no restriction as to how much a name would cost. The other change to the process was that if, for example, in open TLDs, if you wanted to apply for an open TLD, you had to also offer what was called a sunrise phase. So in other words, during this phase, applicants that were trademark holders in a name, and also were inside what is called the trademark clearinghouse, could apply before anybody else could apply for a particular term. So that was something that was slightly different to what we'd had in previous rounds. There was also a limited rights phase, which some TLDs used, particularly the restricted and geo TLDs. You had the open phase, or the free-for-all phase, whatever you want to call it, where anybody could apply for a particular name. So open TLDs were, as the name suggests, open. Anybody can apply, anybody can buy, anybody can use. The next one of interest is the community TLDs. Now, a community TLD is very specific. So, for example, .bank or .hiv, for example. So these sectors or industries or TLDs represent a very specific community. So they would have provided very specific information from these communities, i.e., you know, the name will only be used for members of that particular community. The money that is raised from selling of those names would go towards that community, you know, whatever that percentage might be, for community projects, for example, and stuff like that. So community TLDs also got preference when it came to applications in when the window closed. So let's just say, let's give a hypothetical example. The community is kickboxing. Okay, let's say the kickboxing is a official community and somebody applied for .kickboxing as a community. But 10 others applied as normal open TLDs. So in other words, businesses that had no connection with or association with or any form of usage from the community applied. The community would trump all of those when it came to the auction phase. It wouldn't actually even get to the auction phase. It would be decided before that. As long as the community could provide sufficient proof that they were a legitimate community and represented a legitimate community, they would have been given preference over anybody else. So community TLDs, as the name suggests, are for communities. There weren't as many community applications as you would think, because it's not, as I mentioned before, this is not a cheap exercise, you know, to apply for a new GTLD. You're looking at running costs of close to $2 million over a period of 10 years. That's a lot of money. So, and if you are selling names and giving away the majority of your funds to the community, it's very difficult to get or keep a community TLD operating. There were some plans to see if the ICANN would maybe cut prices for communities, etc., but that decision was taken not to do that, which in hindsight wasn't necessarily the correct option. Personally, this is my personal capacity, I think or community TLDs should be given some preference. You know, if they've been able to provide proof that they are a legitimate community and represent legitimate community interests, they should be allowed to be given a some kind of halving of costs, etc. Either not you know, pay normal charges, but when it comes to paying ICANN for registration of names, etc., they don't pay anything, or they pay a portion of those fees. So that's the end of there. That was just a personal. That's just a personal viewpoint. Because at the end of the day, community TLDs pay the same price as everybody else. So we have had open TLDs, which are free for all TLDs. In other words, anybody can register in them, anybody can utilize them, anybody can own a name in that. So a brand could own a name, a non-brand, an individual, a group of individuals, etc. And then you have communities, which, as suggested, had more restrictions in place. So you had to provide proof that you were part of that particular community, and whatever you were going to use the second level name for was going to benefit the community that you were in. So yeah, there's that. That's the first two types of TLDs. And so they were the original ones that were envisaged in the ICANN application phase, open and community. In the next episode, we'll talk about those that weren't necessarily envisaged or may have been thought about, but and were, worked into the application window, our application guidebook, by way of changing some policy decisions within the guidebook. That didn't really help these particular other TLDs, but we will look at them next week. There's quite a few of them, and it's quite an interesting topic that. So, again, although 1,600 new gTLD names have been applied for and granted, I know over 2,000 were applied for, but only over 1,600, just over 1,600, were actually granted. There is still a demand for new gTLDs. That demand has come from the brand community, for example, where brands that didn't apply in the first round, because they may not have even existed in the first round, for example, never so and had other things on their plate at that particular time, so didn't really have an opportunity to apply. There's been other types of communities that have arisen. And political parties that didn't reply in the first round, have also expressed an interest in potentially looking at the next round. So yeah, there's a demand for it. And the next application window, as I've mentioned in previous episodes, the next application window should, if everything goes according to plan, should take place towards the end of next year, i.e., it should open towards the end of next year. Where we will see how many people applied or how many organizations applied. At this stage, there's no plan to make it open to individuals. It's going to remain as business only, or people that own a business can apply, but not individuals. So no matter how much money you might have, you probably won't be able to apply. As I have in most episodes, given you quite a bit of information to mull over. But if anybody has any questions or any comments or whatever, please feel free to reach out to me. I look forward to continuing this discussion and sharing my knowledge of the domain name sector. So I hope you've learned a few things today. And we'll also start eventually looking at other topics, like I've mentioned before at the beginning of each of my episodes. But at the moment, we're still talking about domains. So hopefully that still keeps people interested. And I look forward to everyone coming back again next week, after today, obviously. So listen to today, and I'll bring another one out next week. And I hope you'll subscribe, depending on what platform you're on. Tell your friends and family and co-workers, etc., and anybody you think might be interested in domain names, or anything for that matter, just to have a listen, give me some feedback. It'll be spectacular. So I'd like to say goodbye for now. Have a great day. For those of you that are starting your Sunday, those of you that are at the end of your Sunday, or those of you that are at the middle of your Sunday, have a great time. Always remain positive. No matter what the situation you're in, keep your head up. If you're in trouble, speak to friends, family, etc. So I hope everyone has a great week ahead. And next week, we'll talk a little bit more about domain names. So thank you very much for listening. And yes, enjoy the rest of your day. Thank you all. Bye-bye.